Welcome to the War Report on Public Education. The future of education is an important concern for our time. Where it's heading, how it's evolving, and the influence corporate America has on its outcome. The War Report on Public Education provides critical news, analysis, and perspectives on the what, why, who, where, when, and how of both the new corporate state elites campaign, the Machiavellian agenda to destroy the nation's public education system, and the rising public resistance movement to defend and defeat this Machiavellian agenda. And now, here is our host, Dr. James Abington Miller, Jr.
Happy Mother's Day to everyone. Here, from here, the War Report on Public Education. And when I say everyone, I'm saying to mothers all over the globe, this is your day. Happy Mother's Day. Now, and back to our regular intro. Welcome, everyone, to this edition of the War Report. You notice how today I'm a lot more calm and hopefully serene and watching my P's and Q's. I don't know how long this is going to last, but I'm trying to be in that Mother's Day kind of mood spirit so that all mothers would be proud of me saluting them today. Probably will last about another 3 minutes, and I'll go back to me being me. Okay, here we are. This show, I mean, you guys already know this, but today's Mother's Day. Today's also Sunday, and we do our shows on Sunday. And this particular Sunday is the second edition of our Teachers Appreciation Month. So, today's show is going to seek to combine both of those events, celebrating mothers on their day and showing our undying appreciation for our fellow teachers everywhere. And that's going to be possibly kind of tricky. I don't know. See how I handle it. But in any event, before I go too much further, this is our fourth Mother's Day show, and in the past, I've always encouraged everyone to call in and give a tribute, shout-out to their mother here on War Report. I would love to have you call in and say hi to your mom and give a little tribute to her, and the number that you need to call to do it is 888-627-6008. Let me repeat, 888-627-6008. If you call that number, you can continue to listen live as well as be a temporary guest on the show at the same time. So, again, for those of you who've been around for going on 4 years now, you know that. For anyone who's new, I just explained what you can do. This is a radio talk show that you can call in and be part of the conversation. And for today, you can call in and give a tribute to your mom. Okay, now, how are we going to do this? Well, Mother's Day. I'm going to probably make the theme Mother's Day heavy as well as the teacher thing as well. And I do what I always do, and that is your mother as your first teacher. How do you like that for combining those two monumental events? And for most of us, all of us, your mother is your first teacher. And let's talk about her in the role of mother. Come on, everyone here are adults. So you know the Adam and Eve thing, the conception thing, and it's the mother who carry us through whatever length of the cycle is, to full term, the 9 months and what have you. That's the mother. That's what makes the mother special, that gives us life. Now, also, when I talk about mother and as our teacher, and et cetera, I'm also referring to the father as the parent, the father as the teacher. Guys, when I do Father's Day, it will be your day, and I'll be much more specific. But when I talk about the mother, especially mother as a teacher and et cetera, I'm also talking about both parents. But it's in our society and most of the world that it is the mother who is our first teacher. Women from beginning of time have had the responsibility to, once we are born to them, to take care of us. It's the mother who, of course, you know, the breastfeeding, which back then and today, if you do breastfeeding, they gave us the nutrition that we need to be able to survive and to grow. You know the routine, since most of my audience are women on this show. I would say probably in the neighborhood of 80-85%, maybe even 90%. And many, if not most, of the women are in the education profession as teachers, okay, and some administrators. And so I'm not telling you all the things that you do as our mothers, because you already know it well before we do. Your kids, your offspring, and all. But I'm laying it out in this kind of sequence because, for me, this seems to be just the best way to go about it. You know, the mother, what makes mothers special? Many of us, even us, the children, will take that kind of for granted because that's what all mothers do. That's what mothers do. And what makes the mother, in my view, the most special person in the world is for most of us, our mothers are our nurturers. I'll say that again. Our mothers are our nurturers. Not only do they bring us in, and that's that 9 months of trying to make sure that they're doing the right thing to help us make it through that period and come out as well fit as possible. That's the nurturing also. And then when we do come out, and wow, that begins the process of this long-term socializing us to become little human beings and to start the process of learning how to speak and how to walk and how to behave. And the very most important thing of all during this period, how not to crap on ourselves, okay? I mean, part of becoming civilized is stop crapping on yourself. And me and anyone else around you, that whole process, let me come up. Mothers are the nurturers. They go through that more so than anyone else in our little lives at that period of time. And so we have, for me, again, that's a teaching process. I mean, if the guys were listening and even other women were listening, I'm saying, we didn't recognize it then. You may not even recognize it now, but that's a teaching process. That's an art. And you're going to see as I move forward, and I'll just say it right now, what great mothers and great teachers have in common, they are nurturers. We are nurturers. Okay, I'm not a mother when I say we, but I was a teacher, okay? Somebody even said several times today, Happy Mother's Day. I'm going, okay, I think you mean that in a good spirit. So anyway, that's what we share in common. Teachers, mothers, we are nurturers. And that mother who have it really, really hard because starts that nurturing, this is it, from conception to birth, and then from birth to, I'll say preschool now, but in my day it would be from birth to kindergarten. Whoa, the formative years, that's the real, real hard time getting us through those first 5 years. As I said, you know, learning how to speak and how to walk and how to behave, that's the real part. And how to get us ready to go out in the world, well, that's what kind of is. Kindergarten is going out into the world. And again, I'm going to use kindergarten because that's what it was in my day. We didn't have preschools for the common folks. Only the wealthy would have like something like a preschool. Then it would be in the form of a nanny or something. But for the rest of us, it was getting us ready for kindergarten. So that when we got in kindergarten, who minimally embarrassed ourselves versus those coming into kindergarten who would be a total embarrassment to themselves and their parents and all. But that's the hard part. And if you, I mean, I know you guys remember this part, you have to, the growing up. Memory comes in somewhere, maybe 3, 4, 5 years old. And especially for those of you who are parents, you know what I'm talking about in terms of those first 5 years. And most of that falls on our mothers, and especially when I was growing up and before then, in that women didn't work outside the home in great numbers like they do today. So, you know, the notion of a housewife and working 24/7 in the home, and if you had a kid, this is what you spent your time doing, was raising that kid. That's the hard part. That's those first 5 years. I know I've said this several times, but having spent my adult life studying child socialization was one of my areas of expertise, I would say, and having been a child, I know how hard that is. And again, in terms of appreciating our mothers, people, we need to always flash back to those first 5 years and recognize and realize how hard it was for them, especially those of us who had our own children. You know, without me having to talk about it anymore, how hard those first 5 years are. And so really, that's the first teacher experience for all of us is that. But our mothers, and again, when I said it, because I'm going to say it again and again and again. Today is Mother's Day. It's not Father's Day. And when you have a family situation where you have a father and the father is anywhere active in the child-rearing process, all of this can apply to father as well. But this is not your day, dude. This is Mom's Day. So I'll continue to say Mom, Mother's Day. And so that we have to look back at this and really begin to see it as an art. We have manuals. We have, back in my day, not quite my day, but shortly after, a guy named Dr. Spock and all the people who wrote books on parenting and what have you. But being a parent and being a mother is an art, not a science. And how artful our mothers are will be reflected in how we are when we go to that first day of school, when we go outside of the home and have our introduction to the larger world, the artfulness of our mothers will be present. I go further in saying that we take our mothers with us everywhere we go. Not just to school, that first day or kindergarten, but to every day of school. Speaking for myself, I take my mother with me everywhere I go now. I'll say it again. Everywhere I go now, everything that I do now, I take my mother with me. That's the impact that mothers have on their children, and they can have on their children, as not only our first teachers, but also our first nurturers. You may agree, you may not agree, but that's where I come from when I think about my mother and when I think about Mother's Day, is that first teacher, that first nurturer, you know, and also, and again, that first person who loved you, that first person who think you're the cutest thing in the world when you're not, but to her, you are. That first person who think that, you know, the old saying, the sun sets in your presence because you are the universe. That person who, when you misbehave, you can feel those eyes on the back of your neck if she's present, and you straighten up. That person who, when people are getting on you, whether it's rightful or not, will appear and put everyone in their place, grab you by the hand, take you home, close the door, and if you were wrong, back then, spank your butt. But when she opened that door, she would be the first one to step through it, because she always put herself between you and harm's way, and who had that magical ability to not only stand between you and harm's way, but to circle around and always have your back. That's the mom that I'm talking about. Let me give you an example. I've given this example before, probably when I was doing the Mother's Day thing. This particular example comes to mind now. When I was in the latter half of the fourth grade, I was at a new school, and it was recess time out on the playground. Something happened, and after recess, we come back into the homeroom, and my homeroom teacher at this time was a male teacher who was filling in for a female teacher who was out on leave. We hadn't gotten a substitute yet. This particular male teacher was the enforcer in school. He was the only male teacher, and we had a male principal. And so he calls me up, and he was going to paddle me. I had no idea what was going on, but something had happened, and it was at recess time. Something had happened, and someone blamed me or said that I was the person responsible. The guy didn't ask me anything. He was just going to paddle me. Now, I'm 10 years old. So that means that maybe, yeah, I'm 10 years old. When in Detroit, we had our elementary school went up through the sixth grade. So I must have been, I'd say either the last half of the fourth grade, or, yeah, I think it was the last half of the fourth grade. And so I said no. Basically, it was no, and what I meant was there was no way in hell. I hadn't done anything, and you were not going to paddle me. And remember, this guy's the enforcer, and big, tall, red-haired guy. He grabs me by the arm, drags me, I mean, literally pulls me down the steps to the principal's office, and the principal is going to paddle me for defying him against paddling me and whatever it was that I was supposed to have done. And I pretty much told him the same thing. No way. I didn't do it. And he's not going to paddle me. You could call my mother. They both didn't like that. And so the principal stuck me between two metal file cabinets. I mean, he stuck me between them. My nose was touching one, and the back of my head was the other. It's like shoehorned me into between these two file cabinets. And he left me there. I don't know if he forgot about me, but he basically left me there. Lunchtime came, and he still left me there. Lunchtime halfway over, and finally his secretary told him that he couldn't do that. He couldn't keep me from having lunch. So he pulled me out, let me go home. Lunchtime is over. I get home. My mother wanted to know, like, what happens? I live right across the street from the school, by the way. So she had my lunch ready, and she wanted to know what happened, and I told her. My mother got up, went to her room, came back. She was in her Sunday go-to-meeting clothes. Grabbed me by the hand. We marched over to the school. She marched us into the principal's office, and she ate him a new one. Got to picture this. My mother was all of maybe 5'3", possibly 5'4". Very, very thin, but she was a tiger. And I remember some of the conversation, and she tells the principal, he didn't do it. He told me he didn't do it. And the principal said something to the effect, well, you know, like all kids kind of lie. My mother looked at him and said, my son doesn't lie. And he doesn't lie to me. He doesn't lie to you. And she looked at me and she said, did you do it? And I said, no. And basically she said to him, case closed. He didn't do it. He wasn't buying that. And so she insisted that we go upstairs to the homeroom to see this teacher. So we went up and got there, and my mother confronted the teacher. Bottom line was, she demanded that the teacher and the principal asked the class what happened and who did it. And when the principal wanted to know who did it, if there were 30 kids in class, 28 of them pointed to this one guy, Philip. Unanimously, it was Philip. And the teacher and the principal, I won't say how they looked in my opinion at that particular time, but bottom line was, they were embarrassed to say the least. They were going to whip me for something I didn't do. They didn't believe me when I said I didn't do it, because all kids lie. And it was my mother, my knight in shiny armor, who went there and said no. She backed up my no. That's what, you know, mothers do. And that's what my mother did my entire life. And I'll break that part down for you, what I'm talking about here. My mother, and again, my mother and my father, my mother taught me very early, you don't have to lie to us. Tell us the truth. Because whatever you have done, we will always love you. There's nothing that you can do that we will stop loving you. But you have to tell us the truth. You have to own up to whatever it is you did, or in this case, didn't do, and we'll deal with it accordingly. And so when the principal was accusing me and the teacher, I told them I didn't do it. Why? Because my mother told me I didn't have to lie. That if I did something, I did have to own up to it. And that they would be there to protect me if I did it, and they would be there to protect me if I didn't. But the principle was, don't lie to us, and you really don't have to lie to anyone else, per se. That's what mothers do, you know. And that's just one example. In my particular case, I can tell you many, many stories of my mother, who was my knight, my protector, my nurturer. And the most famous one, of course, is that for me, since no one has called in to talk or say anything about their mothers, I'll continue with some of my mother's stories here. I have probably said this too, and I know I have, and maybe more than one occasion. I don't even know where to start on this one. When my mother and father came up to Detroit, Michigan, that's where I was born. My mother was pregnant. She was 17, a few months away from her 18th birthday. She went to a doctor to have someone to help monitor the pregnancy. It was discovered that mine would be a crisis pregnancy, and that basically, well, what was said was, you're not going to be able to carry this child to term. And if you try, you could die. Child could die. The chances of both of you surviving are almost like slim and none. And Slim had died. My mother shared this information with my father. They got on the phone. They called my mother's mother. A few days later, my mother's mother, which would become my grandmother, came up from our farm in Illinois. They got together, and they decided, because my mother insisted, that she was going to challenge the doctor's diagnosis and seek to carry me to term. In other words, my mother was willing to die to save my life. 17 years old, willing to put her life on the line to save my life. That's what mothers do. And so, as you can see, we both survived. But in that process, and when I say I carry my mother with me everywhere I go and have for 73-plus years now, that's a true statement. That's not an exaggeration. That's not a fantasy. It is a truism. And I'm sure I've told this part of it. The doctors said that she's going to try taking me to term. She needs to go home, get in the bed, and not get up. That's why my grandmother came up, so that she could take care of the household, me, my mother, and my father, and so my mother could stay, you know, bedridden. And my mother, being very religious, because her mother was a pillar of the church growing up, went to church, found my grandmother's church, 4 or 5 days a week. She taught Sunday school the whole nine yards. All her kids were raised in the church and et cetera. So my mother, she would tell me that during that crisis period, how she would pray 3, 4, 5 times a day. And I later dubbed her prayers what I call her grand bargain with her God. And it went something like this. That if only one of us survive, let it be me, the child. If her God saw to it that both of us would survive, she promised him, number three, that she and my father would love me, take care of me, and raise me to be a good person. And a part of that was that they would raise me so that basically I would survive in the world as it was then and still be a good person. Number four was that I would go to Wayne State University, which was our Detroit's big-time university, and that she wanted me to become a doctor, an MD, and with that knowledge and skill set, go out and help people. That was her grand bargain. And literally and figuratively, she did all of those. I just recently wrote something that I call The Impossible Dream, The Impossible Quest, and it was basically a tribute to my mother and my father. My father added to that bargain that he wanted me to get an education because my father couldn't read and write. And with my education, be able to get a good job, a better job, a job that I could wear a white shirt to, a clean white shirt to, and come home with that white shirt still being clean. Compared to him, he would go to work, he would come back, and he would have dust, dirt, steel fragments from head to toe, because he worked in the most dangerous part of the automobile manufacturing process called the foundry. And so that was their, I call it their, because that's what it was, their impossible dream. Growing up, I used to mouth that part of, what are you going to be when you grow up, little boy? I would say, I'm going to be a doctor. And people would laugh at me. Relatives, the other adults, you name it. And probably, I don't say rightfully so, but at the time, there was 2 million people in Detroit. And my chances of going to college, going to med school, graduating and becoming a doctor, 1 in 2 million? That's what I said, 1 in 2 million. And so every element of her grand bargain came to fruition. Obviously, I survived. They raised me to be what I would say a good person. I went to Wayne State University. I got my doctorate. And I've spent my entire life trying to help people. I didn't become an MD. I became a PhD because I decided I wanted to teach. And I felt that teaching would give me my greatest shot at really helping people, a lot of people, as opposed to being a doctor, seeing one patient at a time, X patients a day, a week sort of thing. Teaching, I would see hundreds, I would see thousands, and depending on how long I taught, maybe tens of thousands. And out of that, just maybe, I could influence a lot of young people to want to go out and be good people and help people. And I think to a considerable extent, I've done that. And that's why I called it, this tribute was The Impossible Dream, The Impossible Quest, because I've been on that quest basically from birth. And so that, again, is, and that's what mothers do. And, man, we have to give the shout out to our mothers. My mother, as I said a moment ago, both literally and figuratively, was my first teacher. And I mean that, not only did she go through the things in terms of, feeding me and teaching me not to spit up the food and all the things that kids go through and you have to learn to, quote, civilize us, to humanize us, and what have you. But literally, She started when I was 4 years old. And I've told this story, and I probably will tell it every opportunity that I get. She started teaching me the basics of the alphabet, numbers, yes, and a little bit by the time I was very close to five, a little bit of math. What she taught me was my ABCs, as she called it, my numbers, and my letters, and how to count from 1 to 100 consecutively. And how she was preparing me for the first days of school and for kindergarten. And her mother had done the same thing with her. And my mother was the last of 12 children. Four died. The 8 that survived, my grandmother taught all of her children how to read and write, or do their letters and numbers and reading and writing and arithmetic. And my grandmother taught almost all of the kids in their town. This was in southern Illinois. And people called her a teacher. She wasn't a teacher by what our standards would be in terms of a person who went to school and maybe some form of a college or teacher training to become a professional teacher, but she taught. She taught my mother, and in turn, my mother taught me. And one story to go with that, and I told this before, and again, I will tell it all the time. Kindergarten, second week, third week, somewhere in there, I'm playing like all the kids, and my kindergarten teacher, we had two different teachers, an AM teacher and a PM teacher. I was in the AM class, which meant 11:30, whatever time I went home, and the PM teacher would start after lunch, but they both were there full days. So anyway, my teacher pulled me over, and she wanted to play a game. And we played this game. And when it was over, she got up. She went over to the PM teacher. They huddled. Then the PM teacher came over, and she wanted to play a game as well. Okay, well, you played a game. When it was over, the two teachers got together, they huddled, one teacher left, she came back with a third teacher. This third teacher wanted me to play a game. I was having fun, so I was playing games, and so I played the game. When it was over, the three of them, again, huddled, and I'm going, what? I don't know what's going on. So I don't even think I'm saying to myself, you know, what's going on, but I had no clue. It turned out that the first teacher, the second teacher, the third teacher, they were giving me an IQ test. Back then, they didn't play around with it. It was a straight out IQ test. Depending on the score that you got, you stayed in, quote, kindergarten, or you was taken upstairs to, I think then it was the third floor, and an area, we call it the open air room. And I know I've told this before. It was a special ed. When you went up there, you weren't seen again until it was time to go home. It was dreaded. It was fearful. Nobody wanted to go upstairs. And that's what they were determining, whether or not I could stay in the class or I should go up to the open air room. The confusion, the huddling came about because that first test, I crushed it. And my teacher was not expecting that. Now, let me take you back. I was born in 43, 5 years later. No, that's 48. So, Detroit was an integrated school system, not segregated like most of the country, but there weren't that many black kids in the Detroit area, at least where I was living at the time. And so the teacher was not expecting me to crush this test. She goes over to the second teacher. They give me a second test, the same, measuring the same thing. They gave me the test like minutes apart. I crushed the second test faster, better than I did the first test. Why? Tell me, they're just giving me a test. And it was so much the same as the first one that I picked up some skills in that short period of time, so I crushed it. The third teacher was a first grade teacher. She was giving me a first grade test. I crushed that one. And they would end up calling my mother, telling my mother that they were recommending that I either be put in the first grade, possibly the second grade, because I was so advanced compared to the rest of the kids and the test. Now, was I smart? Smart? I like to think I was, but here's what I think really happened. As I told you, my mother was my first teacher. And what I didn't tell you was that when I was four, my mother and father went downtown. We lived right out the edge of downtown and went to the big, like, would be Target now or a Kmart or maybe even a Walmart, they could use that word. And they bought all the supplies that the teachers were buying for kindergarten. And it was my mother who then spent a year preparing me. She had already been working on the ABCs and counting and all, but I worked with puzzles. So I knew how to put a square in a square hole and a round peg in a round hole and all that other stuff. And I could print even, the rudiments of printing. I knew my name, first name, second, last name. I knew my address. I knew my parents' name. I could tie my shoes. Also, I wasn't crapping on myself either. I knew how to behave. I knew how to do all kinds of things that I guess kindergartners don't know when they come in. At least back then they didn't. And I knew how to do all kinds of things that first graders maybe haven't even mastered. And so this was my mother. This was my mother being my mother and my first teacher. This was my mother being my nurturer. She would then turn me over to the public school system, and other teachers would play that part of being the nurturers, being my teachers. And here's where, as I said earlier, these two merge. This is what teachers, the teachers we have now, the teachers we had back then, this is what good teachers do. This is what make good teachers, in my view, and I'm sure others, what makes teachers special, what makes teachers different. Because those good teachers become both your teacher and, to some extent, your surrogate parent. And in many cases, and especially today, in kindergarten, first grade, second grade, what have you, when you still have homeroom, if you still have those universally, you know, that teacher spends more time with the students, kids, than many parents, especially if both parents or the mother has work. That teacher will spend 6 hours with the students. And over those 6 hours, if she's that real surrogate mom, that real nurturer, she is damn special. She is damn different. This what has made both parenting and teaching an art, not a science. It's never been a science. It will never be a science. Screw those people who want teachers to be replaced by computers and algorithms. I'm going to take that back. Not screw them. Fuck them. They never will be the nurturers. They will never be the parent. They will never be that extraordinary teacher, because this is what makes parents and teachers extraordinary. This is what makes parents and teachers what they are. When they can bring value to teachers, when they bring value to the classroom, when they bring value to nurturing the students, when they help shape students' lives, they're helping shape humanity. Now, you tell me that's not special. I'm going to tell you, I will look at you 24/7 and tell you, you are dead wrong. Teachers, the good, the great, are special. And we, individually, collectively, nationally, globally, ought to appreciate our teachers for what they are. They're extraordinary. And they bring so much to our lives, our children's lives, and to humanity, past and present, and future. And this is why we here at the War Report appreciate our teachers. We are teachers, of course. You know, we are parents. And we recognize the role that both play in our children's lives. We recognize when that parent who's doing the parenting thing also saw it slide over and become a teacher, and then slide back to being a parent. And we recognize it when that teacher is being paid to teach the curriculum, be paid to make sure that you are being socialized to play the various roles in society when you grow up, to fulfill the job requirements that people who have jobs, and to be the obedient citizen. When that teacher slides from being that person to being that surrogate parent who knows that, boy, you're acting different today. Is something wrong? Maybe she'll have 20 kids, 30 kids, but she will know you. And she'll know something's wrong. Is he sick? Someone bothered her? Is he hungry? What have you? And that's something else. Our teachers and our mothers, they are the first people to know us. They know us before we even know ourselves. They know us before other people in the world come to know us. I'm going to stop for 2 seconds because my time is running out. But what I just said, in my view, is humongous. My mother as my mother as my first teacher, from the first day of life, in my particular case, my mother's pregnancy, to every day in my life, until she died, she knew me. And sometimes she knew me better than I knew myself. And that's a big statement coming from me, because my areas of expertise has always been, I'm a social psychologist by training. I studied sociology, psychology, clinical psychology. I had over almost 1,000 hours in clinical training. And my area then was, you know, child development sort of thing and personality. I taught personality theory, because my mother has always known me better than I knew myself. And when I got married, my mother was one who told my, when I was then married, how to recognize things and how to deal with me. I had teachers, not many, but I can think of one or two who got to know me damn near better than I knew myself. And those were the teachers who were my mentors. And so, you know, I can go on and on and on. And I do have this question for you, and our time is running pretty much out. Who was the best teacher in your life? And you can separate that in terms of your mother and then your school teachers. Or you can combine them and say the best teacher, either from birth to whenever, and wrestle with that question. And then wrestle with it in terms of how your own children would answer that question, especially your, like, your adult children or your teenage children. Who was the best teacher? And whether or not they would say you or someone else. That's a question, because I've already answered it. Because here's what we all have in common. We all have mothers. Simple but awesomely true. And we all have teachers. We all have mothers. We all have teachers. And it's going to, I think, when you start thinking about it, you're going to possibly come to the realization or the awareness that these are the people who understood us the best, better than we did ourselves, almost better than anyone else. These were the people who loved us before we loved ourselves and before anyone else did. These were the great nurturers in our lives. Not only did they socialize us to get us ready for the social world, but they socialized us also to be human beings, to be individuals. You know, they taught us all those things like to speak, to walk, to behave ourselves, and as I said earlier, not to shit on ourselves. You know, some of us got that pretty quickly. A lot of us didn't. But anyway, these were the mothers as mothers and as teachers, and teachers as teachers, and teachers as surrogate mothers, as nurturers. And I'm going to say, these are the people who wanted us to be the best we could be. Think about that, too. And for most of us, it was our mothers as mothers, mothers as teachers, teachers as teachers, teachers as surrogate mothers. They wanted us to be the best we could be. And for many of us, we are who we are because of our mothers and our teachers. And as I said earlier, I am definitely the person that I am because of my mother and a few of my teachers. Hopefully, Joe, if you're listening, will you put up the link for that that I sent you earlier about Mother's Day, the origins of Mother's Day? And people, go to our page, and there is a link that gives you the history of Mother's Day. It's only about it's a video. It's only about a minute and 20 seconds, and it's something that I think all of us need to see. My time is up. Thank you. This has been a show that I did not script. I wasn't sure how to do this for Mother's Day and Teacher's Day. I hope I got it right, and I hope you understood it and enjoyed it. And with that, we here at the War Report, we say thank you, and we appreciate all the mothers and all of our teachers. Have a good one, folks. See you next week.
Join us again next time as we explore and become aware of the most pressing problem of our time, education, corporate America, and their unholy alliance.